From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Halibut and yellowtail flounder fish populations are at all-time lows in the Atlantic. That's according to SeafoodWatch.org of the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Cod, once prolific in the North Atlantic, is struggling. Closer to home, catfish in the Cape Fear River and blue crab and mullet from the Brunswick River have high enough levels of mercury that officials recommend avoiding them. Some guides point consumers to wild-caught fish with advisories about the cleanliness of farmed seafood, but some species of wild-caught fish are so overfished it can be hard to know how to do the right thing for your body and the planet. Today, we're going to explore how to find good quality, lower mercury fish, easy ways to cook it in a healthier way, and how some of the changes to aquaculture are affecting the fish market, and why farmed seafood could actually be healthier. Dean Neff is here with a place at the table to help us sort this out today. He's former chef and co-owner of Pinpoint Restaurant in Wilmington. He was also a James Beard semifinalist for Best Chef in the Southeast in 2019. And he teaches cooking at Seasoned Gourmet while planning some pop-up meals at Love Lydia, his partner's bakery, also in Wilmington. And there may be a new restaurant in the works, but we'll hear more about that down the road. Dean Neff, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. And of course, we're inviting you to join the conversation during the live Wednesday discussion. Have you wondered about the best way to find fresh, sustainable, local seafood? Do you have a favorite seafood recipe that you'd like to share with us? You can call us during the live discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Dean Neff, there are people who regularly fish in the Cape Fear and Brunswick rivers and then eat the fish. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who haven't thought about doing that. Explain to us who these subsistence fishermen, fisher people are and what they're catching.
Well, there are people in our community that are fishing in the Brunswick River and Cape Fear River and taking fish home and relying on that fish for a source of protein. We're having this this effort and this celebration on Sunday, and we want to get the word out to all people in the community just about fish that is could pose a health risk to people that are consuming it, and give them good alternative options for a better choice. In doing this, it's a super complicated issue. Fish, it's ever changing, and there's nationwide and global factors. But then there's also a lot of information locally. And this is all part of a project that's funded by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Office. And Cape Fear River Watch is a local nonprofit that's running the project, along with the New Hanover County NAACP and New Hanover County Health Department are also partners in this. Duke University and Wake Forest School of Medicine are also partners. And this
so they're putting on this celebration Sunday, May 26th.
Exactly. And I think this is the starting point to kind of cut through, to this issue locally and to kind of get the information that we need to get out there so that, people can start asking the right questions about the fish in the area and learning more. I mean, it's always a good thing to ask questions, and it's always a good thing to, become more educated in regard to the food that we're eating, and especially when it comes to seafood in the area.
Tell us about the fish that people are pulling out of those two rivers, the Cape Fear and the Brunswick River. What are they mostly catching, and why is it not safe?
So tests are showing that fish in the Cape Fear River, to kind of be aware of, are catfish for having kind of higher levels of mercury, also largemouth bass and striped bass. And currently there's a moratorium on striped bass, but you can still catch them, and it's advised that you do not eat those fish. One of the keys to navigating all of this is knowing the resources. The North Carolina Department of Health, their website, you can actually find, these warnings and advisories. So that's Cape Fear River, Brunswick River. We've got some other fish that, you know, we're told need to steer clear of. Striped mullet and also blue crab are, you know, two other ones. You know, and there's mercury content. This is a really, like I said, the fish are moving, you know, around often, so there's no, you know, exact amount that we can say, you know, we're finding in every single fish.
It so it varies from fish to fish, but it's enough.
It's enough
that
to,
scientists are saying probably not a good idea to
right.
eat it.
And, you know, especially with the mercury, with mercury levels in fish, it's something that accumulates in your body. It accumulates in fish bodies as well. Basically, any person from 0 to 15 is advised to stay away. And then women, you know, 0 to 44 are advised to stay away as well, because you can actually pass this mercury along to babies as well. If you're consuming these fish. So it's, you know, I think this event we're doing, it's going to be the celebration on Sunday. It's from 1 to 5 at Castle. It's in Castlehaine, and it's at Northern Regional Park. And it's called the Fish Smart Celebration. It's going to be a big party, and it's free. There's going to be food from Keith Rhodes. He'll have the Catch food truck there.
And he'll be giving away what he's cooking.
He is.
It's free food.
He is, yep. I'll be doing a demonstration. Yep. And then there's also going to be prizes and a DJ, and it's going to be a really fun community event. I hope people come out in droves to find out more about this, because
this is really about teaching people about what's safe and what's not, and how to find good local fish, right?
It is, and it's about community and about gathering together and getting out of the house on Sunday, doing something fun, learning something, and connecting with people.
What do we know about other pollutants in the fish that might be coming out of the Cape Fear River? Is anybody talking about, oh, the bioaccumulation of, say, PFAS in fish, Gen X?
That is something I think, you know, the verdict is still out, and that's a whole nother area of probably research that needs to be done. I think generally speaking, you know, fish and seafood, shellfish that's more in salt water is exposed to more, is actually better, because there's more free-flowing water in these areas. The you know, fresher water and the brackish water is water that tends to be more stagnant. I'm not a professional, scientist in this area, but, you know, I do try to learn as much about it as I can.
You were also telling me before the show that not only, if we take catfish in the Cape Fear River, for instance, not only are there probably higher levels of mercury, which you don't want in your body, but there's an issue. A lot of people around here like to fry catfish. In fact, that's the only way I know that catfish tastes good. But even that's an issue. Explain why.
It is.
Why frying it makes it worse.
So there are chemicals that they're finding that are toxins that are from fossil fuels. We've got PAH and PCB. And these toxins are fat soluble. And what they're finding is that, especially if you save your frying oil after frying fish, it concentrates these toxins. They actually will concentrate in your fry oil. And so what I'm, you know, the demonstration that I'm doing on Sunday at the Fish Smart Celebration is going to be showing an alternative way that to cook fish that I don't think many people use, which I think will be kind of fun. But also, you know, I'm going to also talk a little bit about pan frying as opposed to deep frying. You're using significantly less oil. You're still getting the same result. And you're not saving that oil so that it can also accumulate those toxins in the oil as you reuse it and concentrate those.
What kinds of fish will you be using in your demonstration, and what kinds of fish do you recommend that people go after locally?
So, you know, going to places like Mott's Channel and Sea View, those are great places to go to find in-season fish. I mean, don't be afraid to ask questions when you're there. That is their business, you know, and they know all kinds of details about the fish that really, you know, makes it a lot better for you just to, you know, learn a little something about the fish and also kind of know where it's coming from. locally, we've got access, you know, and this changes seasonally. The one that I'll probably be doing on Sunday will probably be flounder. Flounder, grouper, we've got drum, spots, croakers, sheep's head, tilefish, black bass, pink snapper. I mean, the list goes on and on here. We've also got yellowfin tuna. And then if you're going to eat catfish, I think catfish is great if it is the sustainably farmed catfish that we get from Aden, North Carolina.
Wait a minute. Farmed fish are supposed to be bad, right? Because there are hygiene issues sometimes with farmed fish.
There are. But as in, you know, any free market, people find, you know, kind of sensible solutions to those problems. And we've had a lot of great sort of improvements in farm-raised aquaculture, you know, over the past, few, you know, 10 years, 15 years. It's gotten a lot better. And if you learn about the companies and the farmers that are doing it in a better way, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, we need to stop taking as much fish out of the ocean. You know, it's okay to do it in moderation, and we definitely support that when it's being done the right way. But also, farm-raised fish these days, if it's coming from a thoughtful source, can be, you know, very clean and way different than what we think of when we think of, you know, bad farming practices like farm shrimp and some salmon farms.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Chef Dean Neff about finding and cooking healthier fresh fish. It's a place at the table. And when we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. You can reach us via email on this Wednesday at coastline@whqr.org. You can also call us at 910-343-1138. Dean Neff is answering your fish questions. And we're also looking for folks who want to share their favorite seafood recipes. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Chef Dean Neff teaches at the Seasoned Gourmet, and he's a James Beard semifinalist for Best Chef in the Southeast this year. Today, he's helping us sort through sustainable and healthy seafood choices in the Cape Fear region. There is also a Fish Smart event, which is a celebration, a big party this Sunday, May 26th, from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Northern Regional Park in Castlehaine. Chef Dean Neff will be demonstrating cooking techniques for fish that might be a little bit healthier. And Chef Keith Rhodes of Catch Restaurant will be there with his food truck offering free fresh fish meals. That's this Sunday, May 26th from 1 to 5 p.m. You can ask your own seafood question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Mary from Wilmington says, I'm going to buy salmon at Harris Teeter tonight for dinner. She says, would I be better off buying the farm-raised from Alaska or the wild-caught from Alaska? Both would have been previously frozen, then thawed at the fish counter, I believe. Thanks.
So one of the, you know, there's so many different places fish can come from these days. And one of the best things I think you can do to really empower yourself to make good decisions at the fish counter is to download the Monterey Bay Aquarium Fish app. And you can type in, especially fish that's coming from across, you know, across the country, you can type in kind of the source and ask the person behind the counter kind of exactly where it's coming from, and you can dial in all of the specific facts about it. To me, generally, wild, it's really expensive. It's usually really delicious, though, too. And, you know, but there are also some really great farm-raised, you know, salmon varieties that you can find. Verlasso is not Alaskan, but that's actually can be a really great kind of sustainably farm-raised salmon. And just checking with them and then kind of syncing that up with the Monterey Bay Aquarium app is the way to go. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, and they also have a website, seafoodwatch.org, mm-hmm. I think,
yep.
Which lists out some of the fish to avoid and the ones to go for. And that sort of leads to the fresh catch in a lot of local restaurants. So we know there are some restaurants that source food, different kinds of food from different vendors, and they try to go for local. But isn't it true that most restaurants here, when they say fresh catch, and the fresh catch is salmon or mahi-mahi or swordfish, it may not be a fresh catch from here. What does that mean?
Well, yeah, there's no salmon or to my knowledge, swordfish locally. I haven't seen that. There are things like mahi, but I think fresh catch is something that you see, and to me, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, just because, you know, having the details of where it's coming from, even when it was caught, you know, are kind of the benefits that you get in eating in restaurants who are sourcing things daily.
For example, Catch restaurant.
Catch,
with
exactly.
Keith Rhodes,
yep.
Pinpoint's restaurant.
Doing that.
RX.
And, you know, the list goes on and on. There are a lot of great restaurants that are doing that and taking advantage of all of the great varieties of local seafood. I'm sure the Blockade Runner is doing that. But, you know, I think that it takes a lot. It takes a certain type of chef, and it takes somebody in there daily knowing what to do with those ingredients as they're coming through the door, because it changes so rapidly. It also takes a lot of resources and time in ordering food. Really great chefs spend a lot of time, you know, ordering and getting text messages and calling, and it's a constant, you know, your phone is really important in making sure that you're constantly getting these ingredients in.
And so a lot of these restaurants then, they just don't have that ability built into the business model.
Possibly, or they've chosen to kind of streamline the certain portions of the kitchen's efficiencies through systems, as opposed to somebody who's in there really working to be creative and to work hand in hand with these fishermen seasonally as they're bringing in different offerings and being able to sort of change what they're doing. So yeah, I think that, you know, the fresh catch thing doesn't really mean a whole lot, but just I think asking where the fish is coming from is a good way to do it, and you know, and going to the restaurants that are working to you know, do that, I think it shows that, you know, they're putting the effort in and they're serving much fresher fish probably.
And just so folks really understand what this is like, when you were chef at Pinpoint Restaurant, what was a typical day like for you when it came to communicating with food vendors?
You know, it's an all the time thing, and you know, fish especially is super perishable. When we lived in Asheville, we had a, you know, fish by the time you get it into your restaurant can be 3 days old if you're lucky. Here, there are sources to get fish where the fish was in the water the day before, sometimes the day that you get it. So it's a constant, you know, you have to be open to receiving text messages and, you know, dealing with lots of people and figuring out kind of, you know, your par levels and really doing it every day, making sure that you're ordering fish every day.
So you've named Aden, North Carolina, as a good source for farmed catfish. Are there still places where some fish are farmed? I'm thinking of shrimp from other countries. That can still be an issue in terms of cleanliness.
It can,
right?
It can. And you know, there are definitely certain industries that are, you know, kind of, you know, the shrimp industry. I generally, the rule of thumb for me is to always use shrimp from the United States. And because there are a lot of issues, some of the issues with farm-raised seafood, historically, the bad issues that are associated with it are stagnant water. And so carcinogens build up in stagnant water. And so, you know, there's issues of that. It can be unhealthy in that sense. There's also issues of the feed that they use with certain types of farming. So, you know, a lot of these new aquaculture models are really trying to use better feed, improve the circulation of the water that where the farming is happening. And the results are, you know, way healthier and way nicer. So you kind of have to ask questions about where everything's coming from.
We're talking with Chef Dean Neff. He's with us for our series, A Place at the Table. And this Sunday, May 26th, from 1 to 5 p.m., the Fish Smart Celebration gets underway at Northern Regional Park in Castle Hayne. Dean Neff will be there demonstrating cooking techniques for fresh fish using healthier, sustainable fish. And he's answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can either call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Jordan from Wilmington called in and asked, are oysters safe to eat in the summer months / out of season with refrigeration? Great question.
That's a great question. And it's something that you know, I hear often. And, you know, one of the new rules of oyster eating is, you know, farm-raised oysters locally. If you hate farmed shrimp, you should love farmed oysters because they're totally opposite. Oysters are farmed in the open ocean. There's lots of circulation. These oyster farmers are putting a good resource back into the waters to help improve the water quality. In a lot of scenarios, I have heard of issues in the area of kind of like people don't like the look of oyster farms. So, I mean, that can be a negative drawback. But for oyster enthusiasts, you know, I really personally think that there are a lot of really great things that come along with oyster farming and especially in this area. So those rules are kind of out of the window because oyster farmers really control the depth of their oysters, and so they're staying underwater. They're being refrigerated right out of, you know, from the time they're harvested and they go into the boat to the time they're delivered, and they're super fresh. They're really clean, and oysters are just a really fun. They're a lot like wine in that they taste a lot like the area that they come from, and it's all about kind of this time capsule of, you know, ocean and shellfish that is sealed. And it comes to you live, and you eat it, you know, shucking it, and it's still alive, and you can really taste the ocean in it. So I'm very pro-oyster, and the rules of months with an R are kind of out the door now that we're doing farm-raised oysters. There are some great wild oysters that we only get in December here in Wilmington, which are, you know, we've used some from some great local crabbers and fishermen, Scott and Patty Rader, and they're wonderful, and their oysters are some of the most special oysters I've ever had. They happen to be wild, and you happen to only be able to get them in the cold months. But for the most part, oysters are a year-round thing now.
And are there local oyster farmers that we should be thinking about?
There are. There's NC Oysters. They're wonderful people. Their oysters are wonderful. There's Matt Schwab. His company is called Hold Fast Oysters. There's Tom Cannon. There's so many great oyster, you know, oystermen or oyster farmers these days and women that are just really doing a great job and really changing the quality of the oysters we can offer in the area.
So Jordan has a follow-up to that, and this is something that I've wondered also. Are oysters safe to eat after a heavy rain when all the sediment is stirred up? And would that be different if you're talking about farm-raised versus wild-caught?
It's actually the same, and so the Department of Fisheries will go out and basically test the water after hard rains. After Hurricane Florence, I know there were a few weeks there, or a couple weeks maybe, where we had to wait for everything to kind of run off and everything to kind of get back to normal.
And it was just a couple weeks.
I think it was just a couple weeks. Okay. Yeah. And so, but they're out there testing all the time. And if you're eating oysters, there's a tag that is associated with that oyster that basically proves that, you know, the season is open, that they're allowed to be harvesting these oysters and serving them to you, so you can, you know, feel comfortable in that sense.
David writes, an EPA study tested the levels of toxins in sediments nationwide. The report's summary emphasizes that the levels of toxins tested around North Carolina marinas was the highest in the country. That's interesting. High levels are found in some fish and mollusks. And he says oysters bioaccumulate copper. Well, we'll have to look into that EPA study. I'm not sure which study he's talking about. Is this something that you've heard of before, Dean?
It's not. I haven't heard of that, but it doesn't mean that it's not true. You know, this is it's a huge topic, and it's ever changing, and especially kind of as we get into new areas with different, seeing different trends in climate. There's, you know, with storms and hurricanes coming through, things change, you know, pretty quickly. And so it's definitely, I think, a really good thing to be having these conversations as often as we can about all these things that we're learning.
Churchill in Wilmington asks, is there any monitoring of the health of reef populations off of our own coast? And Churchill, we actually have a show coming up that might address that more specifically with some marine biologists. But Dean, do you have a comment on that?
I really don't. I'm not super, you know, I've kind of heard trends as far, you know, in recent times of what's happening to different reefs. And it seems, you know, kind of sad. And I'm not sure exactly locally how that's all playing out.
Gary, driving through Bladen County, asks, what are the sources of the pollutants and problems that we're seeing in our fish? What can be done about these chemical contaminants? How can we solve it? Great question. The mercury, where does that come from?
You know, I think that there's a lot of sources, and again, this is probably not my area of expertise. I've heard that it actually can be caused by coal ash, but you know, it's one of those things that once it's in the environment, it accumulates, and so yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, factors, including fossil fuels and you know, with a lot of these pollutants, but it is a really big topic. You know, I'm super thankful that we have people in this area with the Cape Fear River Watch. That is a great source, and really they're doing amazing things and doing research on this locally to try to make things better for us. And so it's a really kind of selfless thing that they're doing in getting out there and showing these problems so that we can make progress. And I think getting the word out and getting interest, you know, on a community level is definitely the first step. Cape Fear River Watch is a great resource, though. And this event that we're going to be doing on Sunday, there are going to be a lot of really smart people out there that can answer a lot of these questions. So I encourage everyone who, you know, is interested in this to come out and be a part of the celebration.
Because it's not just about food. Even though Keith Rhodes will be giving away food that he's cooking, you'll be doing cooking demonstrations. But the new Hanover County Health Department is going to be there. Duke University Environmental Law and Policy Clinic, Wake Forest School of Medicine, Superfund Research Center out of Duke University. So
yep.
You might find some scientists in the bunch there.
Absolutely.
Martin writes, I was introduced to skate. It has a wonderful, delicate flavor. I would like to see it offered more often. Is stingray as edible, he asks. Thanks, Martin. Good question.
That is a great question, and I'm so happy you brought up skate, because skate is one of those fish that is, you know, it's actually a ray. It's slightly different than stingray. And I have personally never eaten a stingray, and I don't know why that is. I don't know exactly why. I mean, I've grown up fishing in Savannah, and we caught lots of stingray. I probably ate skate for the first time in 2002. We were getting it shipped in from a seafood company by the name of Foley, and we would get it shipped into Athens, Georgia, and it was so – it has this really sweet, beautiful flavor of scallops, and it's one of the – it's just such a great fish. And so it would be a worthwhile experiment, I think, to try to substitute to see if that would actually work with stingray. There's kind of rumors for a long time. People would talk about cutting out holes in stingray wings and serving them as scallops. I think that is totally not true.
Really?
But that's
urban legend.
I think it is, because the texture of skate is so flaky. It's flaky like a fish, but it has a flavor of scallops. I couldn't imagine that being, you know, and there's also cartilage in the center of those rays, so I don't know how you would kind of get around the cartilage to do that. But skate is a wonderful fish. Great question, and may have to check that out and then answer it on the next episode, possibly.
Yeah. Are skate available locally, do you know? I mean, is that something that you would find in local waters?
I've never caught a skate locally. I've never seen them in stores, in the local fish markets, but I would be willing to bet if you went to a place like Seaview or Mott's, they would be able to source some from you. I think it's typically seen a little bit further up north, but again, check the Monterey Bay Aquarium. I've actually seen they actually list skate on the North Carolina. I think it's the fisheries website. I was looking at it last night and I saw skate on there. So it's possible you could catch it here. I've never actually caught it here. Wonderful fish though, and yes, we should definitely serve more skate in this town.
We are going to have to do a part two then.
Yep.
You've signed on for that, I guess. Mandy from Carolina Beach is asking about tilapia. We've all heard maybe tilapia, farmed tilapia, is something to stay away from. What do you know about tilapia? Is it safe to eat, and should we be buying it?
So the things that I've heard about tilapia, I think, is from a pollutant standpoint, is probably a good alternative option. The problems that I've heard with tilapia are that the feed that are given to tilapia actually increase the omega-6 fats in the fish. And so they have a lot of fats that are typical, that you would typically see with land animals. And so with tilapia, you know, you may think that you're eating omega-3s and getting this really healthy cut of meat when actually you're eating a lot of kind of bad fats in that. So it can be a good source of protein when eaten in moderation. I don't think fats are always a terrible thing, but you know, I think that it's not kind of a substitute for a fish like salmon or you know, some of these other fish that we get locally. Cobia is another one with a lot of omega-3s. So it's not a substitute for fish with omega-3s.
You're listening to Coastline. It's the third installment of A Place at the Table with Chef Dean Neff. Today, our focus is local seafood. You can email us on this Wednesday at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this short break, we'll hear from Jeffrey and Jane. You'll have one more segment to get your own question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Dean Neff is joining Cape Fear River Watch, the New Hanover County NAACP, the New Hanover County Health Department, and others, including catch chef Keith Rhodes, this Sunday, May 26th from 1 to 5 p.m. for the Fish Smart Celebration at Northern Regional Park in Castlehaine. Dean Neff plans to demonstrate some cooking techniques with healthier, more sustainably sourced fish. And you can ask your own question of Dean Neff on this Wednesday by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. You can also call us at 910-343-1138. It is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And I want to swing back around to that email that we got from David about the EPA study that tested the levels of toxins in sediments nationwide. He also said that oysters bioaccumulate copper, and we said, of course, we haven't looked at this study and don't really know about that yet. And WHQR's Vince Winkle popped in with this. Oysters growing on, and this is from that EPA study, oysters growing on wood treated with chromated copper arsenate have elevated levels of metals, especially copper. Oysters living inside a residential canal lined with CCA wood bulkheads were often green and had higher copper concentrations. These oysters had an elevated incidence of a previously described histopathological atrophic condition, metaplasia, of the digestive diverticula when compared to reference oysters collected from nearby rocks. And we'll have to unpack this in a much more user-friendly or listener-friendly way on another show, but that's good to know. Thank you for following up on that, Vince. And
it also sounds like farmed oysters are kind of the way to go and avoid any of those areas of what those oysters are, where those are coming from.
That's right. Jeff asks, I've heard farmed fish are low in omega-3 fatty acids. Is that correct?
That can be, and there are, you know, Verlasso salmon, for example, that's a brand of salmon that they actually are really concerned with feeding the fish omega-3 feed. If you feed the fish omega-3 feed, you are what you eat, and you know, they will develop omega-3 fats as opposed to omega-6. The fish that eat, you know, typically corn feed and the things that are not fortified with omega-3 will develop the omega-6 fats.
And following up on that idea about the EPA study of copper accumulating in oysters, do you foresee environmental groups and chefs or the food industry working together to solve the issue of pollutants in the food? I mean, that's kind of what you're doing this Sunday.
You know, I think that it's a good starting point, but I feel like it takes, you know, people, consumers as well. And that's one of the, you know, the beautiful things about the restaurants that I've been fortunate to be a part of are that typically the guests are very interested in the food and where it's coming from. And that's really helpful because we can, you know, have these conversations about pollution and good alternatives and sourcing things in a more sustainable way. And, you know, I think you end up, you know, with good results when you, you know, make good choices and ask questions about where your food's coming from.
Speaking of asking questions about seafood, you talked at the top of the show about yellowfin tuna, and lay people, I include myself in that, might not know the difference between bluefin and yellowfin. Where do they come from, and is there a real difference in terms of being sustainable and healthy?
So bluefin and yellowfin tuna, yellowfin is a much smaller species of fish, and bluefin tuna is, you know, has experienced some overfishing, I think, in you know, the past several years, you know, 30 years. And there are some studies that have shown populations of bluefin to be really, really down. And one of the reasons is that bluefin tuna, they create new fish on a larger scale as they get bigger and older. And so as these big fish get taken out of the population, it really limits the ability for them to reproduce in a sufficient way. Yellowfin tuna, that's not as big of an issue because they are smaller and they typically reproduce at the, you know, they don't have that factor in reproduction. Yellowfin are typically a little bit leaner, but they're delicious. There's a lot of them local. And to me, it's kind of nice to get the word out and try to give some of these bigger fish that are, you know, or just to kind of look out and make better choices to let these other fish kind of come back a little bit. So yellowfin is kind of the only fish that I serve personally in the restaurants that I'm involved in these days.
And would you be able to tell the difference between those fish just tasting them?
I can tell by looking at them. You know, bluefin, typically the tuna that you'll see in a lot of sushi restaurants, it typically has more fat in it. You know, but you can get great belly meat from yellowfin tuna as well that's a little more fatty if that's what you're after. But, you know, it's you can tell by looking at it, I would say.
So then talk to us about the principles for choosing fish that might be lower in heavy metals, lower in mercury, healthier fish. There are some basic principles there.
There are, and making sure that you're going for smaller species that are lower on the food chain, those are going to be the lower mercury, you know, fish that you want to use. Speckled sea trout is a great one. There's all different types of fish, you know, snapper can fall into that category as well. But yeah, generally speaking, the smaller fish are the way to go when looking to avoid the mercury.
And once again, what are some of those fish around here that we might want to look for?
So, you know, black sea bass is a great, it can kind of be considered a high-end fish. It can be a little more expensive. If you buy it whole, you typically will get a better deal on it. You know, drum, spots, croaker, sheep's head is a great fish. Sheep's head for a long time was sort of, you know, thought to be a throwaway fish. And it's, you know, in the past 10 years, people have realized what a tasty fish it is. It has a really sweet sort of shellfish flavor. It's got a fun name. A lot of times when we put sheep's head on the menu, people are like, I'm here for the sheep's head. And you're like, it's fish. And so it confuses some people, but it's a really tasty fish.
What are some of the fish that are higher on the food chain that people should avoid?
So, you know, and in moderation in certain scenarios, you know, we're told that with fish like mahi, like those are predatory fish. And, you know, if you're eating those in moderation, it's supposed to be okay. So there's no real rule of thumb, but we do know that the fish that we're...
Note, he says it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't find that in your restaurant. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, you know, mahi is not a bad fish. You know, but there are, I think with the fish that we're finding in the Cape Fear River, we're tending to see, like, those have alarming rates of mercury. And if you are, you know, a child or potentially are going to be pregnant, you really have to, you know, focus in and really be aware of the mercury level in fish in general. So in general, you know, shark tend to have high levels, mahi, swordfish, those larger species of tuna especially. So it's, you're trying to consume fish like that in moderation, according to everything that I've seen. Or if you'd prefer to, you know, steer clear from it altogether, then definitely go with the fish that are smaller and lower down on the food chain.
There is a king mackerel fishing tournament that's a big deal that takes place in Southport once a year. So we know that king mackerel are prolific off the coast here of southeastern North Carolina. When I think of mackerel, I think of oily, stinky fish.
Yep.
Do you recommend eating mackerel? And is there a way to counteract the oil and the stink?
There is, actually. And also when buying fish, you know, fish should never be fishy. That if fish is fishy, to me, it means it's past its prime. And there's just too many, you know, great sources of fish in this town where there's great fish that you don't need to mess with stinky fish. Mackerel is a little bit more pungent because it typically is a little more oily. The things you can do to counteract that, a really simple brine with lots of lemon and lots of fresh herbs will kind of take out some of that. Also making sure that your fish has been gutted upon being caught to kind of get those innards out of the fish. That's something that's really helpful as well. If it stays in there as the fish is not alive, it can sort of permeate the meat a little bit. Trying to do it also in a way that's pretty careful not to cut things open as you're doing it, because that can also sort of keep some of those flavors on the fish. Brining is great. Smoking is another thing that people will do with fish like that after you brine it. And then grilling. So using those cooking methods that are putting a little char on it as well. It's kind of a good way to handle fish like mackerel or bluefish or bonita.
And you have an idea for a recipe that's actually, is this one that you'll be demonstrating on Sunday at the, talking about putting a fish in parchment paper things?
Yep. So, and this kind of, you know, in restaurants, cooking fish in parchment paper is such a great way to go because you prep it up ahead of time. And then when it's time to, you know, cook it, the only thing you do is you throw a bag in the oven and let it cook through and it's done. It's kind of like a TV dinner almost. I will be demonstrating. I'm going to go to the market on Saturday and see what's available. I don't know that we have speckled sea trout, but I love speckled sea trout in this recipe. And we're just doing, this is a really simple dish where I'm blanching some red potatoes. I'm going to put some green beans and a little tomato salad in here with some shrimp and speckled sea trout, and then demonstrating how to use parchment paper to fold this bag. And the trick is to make the bag airtight. We're also going to add in a little bit of lemon juice, small amount of butter, season everything up, and once it's sealed, you bake it off, and you know all of those flavors that are in the bag really concentrate, and it's a wonderful way to eat fish. I feel like it's underutilized, you know, a lot of times, and it's something that if people knew how to do it, they would do it a lot more often, and it would be a good alternative to frying fish as well.
And that's an alternative cooking method that I've heard of before but never done, because it doesn't sound like it. I mean, you're saying the parchment steaming the fish cooks the flavors in that are in the parchment bag.
Exactly.
And to me, it sounds like it would be less flavorful than, say, blackening or charring the outside of the fish.
Well, you can still, if you wanted to, you know, you can still season the fish any way you want. And, you know, I think in this recipe, I'd say you can use a little Old Bay on the fish and then You could also pre-sear it before going in there. But the idea is that all of these ingredients, you could put leeks or celery in there. Aromatic vegetables are great. Herbs are great. But everything is cooking in this pouch. And when you open up the bag, you kind of smell everything in there together. It's all, you know, cooked in the same, you know, the butter mixes. Sometimes you can add things like wine or beer if you wanted to in there as well to help with the steaming and add a little bit of flavor. But it is, it's one of the best ways to eat fish that I've experienced.
Sold. You put beer in the bag. Okay. Jane asks, we've heard of sustainable beef and pork models that use all animal parts, for example, snout to tail. Is there something comparable for fish? Snout to fin to minimize waste? Good question, Jane.
Hognose snapper, the snout. So, I think making sure to pay attention to use the cheeks in fish, also using the collars. There's a lot of great meat in the collars of fish. It almost has the consistency of crab meat once you cook it off, and it's wonderful. And a lot of times in restaurants, you know, the cooks in the kitchen will eat the collars, and we've actually served cheeks before. But using those is great. Also, utilizing, you know, different fish parts to make fish fumet and stocks and things like that can be really great. You could make a fish fumet and then use that as your liquid in the parchment paper fish that we just talked about. There's all kinds of things that you can do to extend the, you know, what you're getting out of a whole fish. Another trick too, if you're getting a whole salmon or something that's really fresh and you wanted to have tartare or a crudo of some sort, you can use a spoon and scrape the rib bones and really extract a lot of extra fish meat after you fillet in between the ribs. And so using a spoon and kind of gently scraping, you'll end up with another batch of meat that you could use for all different kinds of things.
Robert says, ever eaten barracuda?
I haven't. And I'm scared to eat barracuda because of cigarotoxin. That's something that is, I don't know if you'd find that this far north, but I've heard of people getting that from barracuda further south. And that's a foodborne illness that is common in you know, a lot of barracuda further south. And it's something that's kind of with you for life. So I try to steer clear of fish like that.
Okay, good. Martin says, I bought the skate from Hag & Sons on Oak Island twice. Bet they haven't had it since. So we'll follow up on that skate issue.
Yep, Hag & Sons is a great fish market too.
Chef Dean Neff is going to be at the Northern Regional Park in Castlehaine this Sunday, May 26th from 1 to 5 p.m. It's the Fish Smart Celebration. He will be doing some cooking demonstrations, and Chef Keith Rhodes of Catch Restaurant will also be there with his food truck, offering fresh fish meals, and they'll all be talking about using healthier, sustainable fish. There will be vendors, music, health information, and giveaways. And Dean, they'll be reporting back the results of a recent study and educational campaign about finding healthy, sustainable fish.
Absolutely.
And yep. What else are you going to be doing out there?
So, you know, there'll be prizes out there. We're going to do 4 demonstrations. You know, it's just going to be, it'll be a really great opportunity for people to get out and learn some, you know, good stuff about what's going on in the area. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a step towards making things better.
Excellent. That's this edition of Coastlines, A Place at the Table. Chef Dean Neff, thank you so much for
being
with us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Coastlines producer is Rachel Keith. For the last time, we're sorry to see you go, Rach. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster and producer-elect. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.